You're listening to RCR Radio.
How you guys doing tonight? Thanks for tuning in. You guys are listening to River City Sports Talk. I am your host, Patrick Wilkins, and is with me, as always, my good friend, Woody Powell.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back.
And, of course, Ryan Kuiper is with us as well from River City Rant, which is another podcast on rcrradio.com. Thanks for checking it out. And, Ryan, say hey.
Well, I'm back from D.C. Got a lot to say today. It's going to be a good show. Glad to be here.
Ryan did go up to D.C. With the Bold City Brigade. Apparently, we had a very strong presence in Washington, D.C. at FedEx Field. Very, very stoked to hear about that. Obviously, the outcome is not what all of those fans were hoping for when they went to Washington. And we've got a lot of questions, as does every Jags fan in this city. So we're going to try and answer a lot of those questions for you guys tonight. The first being clearly the hot topic in Jacksonville, not only amongst the fans, but here in Jacksonville, but nationwide. It's becoming a national topic as to when do we start Blake Bortles. Chad Henne clearly has had his struggles, and we clearly know that Bortles is the better quarterback. So there's a lot of questions that need to be answered. Chad Henne, give me 1 second. Sorry, I dropped my notebook. But Chad Henne threw for 193 yards, a touchdown, and a pick on 14 of 28 passing. He took 10 sacks for 70 total yards lost, which is unacceptable. But we know that Bortles has the skill set and the intangibles in place to maybe cut that down from 10 sacks to like 4 or 5 sacks. So, you know, there's a lot of questions there. Woody, what is your main concern right now?
With the quarterback position, my main concern is trying to find some consistency. I don't know if putting Blake Bortles in would be effective at this point. We're sort of mired with a lot of issues, and, you know, the quarterback is certainly at the forefront always. But, you know, we knew who Chad Henne is, and he's giving us Chad Henne numbers. The big question is, what can Blake Bortles give us? But, you know, as you'll find out in this show, we've got some serious questions about some other elements of the offense that, you know, might negate any sort of benefit he could bring to the table. And, you know, I'd really like to hear from Ryan, who was there in person. What was it like to see a Chad Henne-led offense in an away game?
Well, I really couldn't tell you because there was no Chad Henne-led offense, really. And
tell us a little bit about your Bold City adventure in D.C., Kuiper.
All right.
We're kind of dying to know. Tell us about it.
All right. First of all, Bold City Brigade put on a heck of a trip up there in D.C. Got a lot of followers to go up there, a lot of Jags fans, diehard. I don't know if you don't know the Bold City Brigade, it's our fan club. It's the number one most prevalent fan club in Jacksonville. For the diehard Jaguar fans out there, you can definitely go to their website. You can sign up for $20 for a year. You get a t-shirt, you get a koozie, pretty much right there. You get your money back, and you get a cool little card to get you discounts at certain memorabilia shops around town, and they also have drink specials at certain
bars.
Does
the memorabilia have to be Jaguar memorabilia? If you get the Bold City Brigade?
No. If you go into, like, let's say Jags Mania in Jags Beach, I'm giving them a little shout out here, but Jags Mania in Jags Beach, you go there and you show them your Bold City Brigade card, I think it's like 15 or 20% off. I'm kind of a casual Bold City Brigade fan. I mean, I don't really go to all of their events, but I'm a diehard Jags fan. A lot of my buddies are in it, so $20, yeah, sure. That's a cool t-shirt, and I don't mind being a part of something new. Our tailgate at the beginning was rowdy. There is 400, you know, 300, 400 Jaguar fans. Not all of them were from Bold City Brigade. In fact, there was a lot of people who lived in the D.C. area that were Jaguar fans that jumped on board with that tailgate that I found out. And, you know, the crowd grew and grew. Had lots of Redskins fans, you know, with that look on their face like, whoa, like I've never seen a single Jaguar fan, much more than, you know, 500, 400 Jaguar fans in one area in their territory, in their, you know, their home field. It was good. It was a sight to see. Got a real hype for the game. Hopefully the Jaguars knew we were there. I'm sure they did, but they didn't show it. Put it that way. So
they did look very flat on the field. You mentioned chance. Were there any chance for Bortles? Were there any
no.
like? Where's the rookie chance?
No, because we were too busy. We were too busy with our heads in our hands, pretty much. Like, we didn't want to watch the game. There was no chance for Bortles because it wasn't – it's not just a quarterback. We were there at the game. I know, like, people at home watching from TV, like, you got to understand, the camera is on the offensive line, the defensive line. You can see the linebackers. You can see the quarterback and the running back. Well, I'm going to tell you, like, when the play progresses on television, you don't see the whole field. You're only watching where the football is on the field. You don't see the whole thing. When you're at a game, you get to see the whole field and how plays they start to formulate in front of you and progress.
I mean, I think what you're alluding to is that you don't want to throw Bortles behind the offensive line that we've got right now that gave up 10 sacks.
And I think every Jaguar fan there saw that. They saw that it's not just the quarterback. And if you were at the game, you would see that the wide receivers were getting absolutely no separation whatsoever. And I know as a fan, when you watch it at home, you don't get to see the cornerback and wide receiver battle downfield. All you see is Chad Henne not throwing the ball, which is a good thing because he would have thrown an interception. And like me being an old high school football player, you know, I played at Nice 2004, blah, blah, blah. I was a DB. I appreciate defensive back play, good cornerback play, good DB play. When I go to a game, I focus more on that because I appreciate the skill level it takes to cover somebody who's running forward at you while you're pretty much running backwards. You're trying to run as fast as they are and turn your hips and compete with that offensive player, the wide receiver.
So what you're saying is that you saw a good cornerback and safety play from the Redskins as opposed to a lack of effort from the wide receiver core, mostly made up of rookies and a second-year player in Mike Brown. Were they hustling through their routes? Did they look like they were running crisp routes and they were just better athleticism on the defensive side, a better scheme? Or were they, you know, all their effort?
I'm going to go ahead and say it's a little bit of both. All right, it's the Redskins did a great job with their defensive game plan because they knew our offensive line is less than subpar. It's awful. There's really no ranking our offensive line because we really don't have one right now. So they know that. So they pinned their ears back and they rushed a quarterback. Chad Henne had barely any time. He's an average quarterback with time. When you don't give him any time, it makes him way bad. So honestly, they had a good game plan. They were pressing off the line, and our wide receivers, being young, seemed like they more chose the outside route on the defensive person instead of trying to cut it inside, trying to get inside on the defender. And it just seemed like there was no trust between the quarterback and the wide receiver. And that's why you see Chad Henne hold that ball for a split second long, and that's a split second too long in the NFL.
Well, I think it all boils down to the quarterback position. I mean, obviously the offensive line needs work, but when you've got a defense that's stacking eight men in the box, they're going to pin the ears back and they're going to come at you. As Jeff Lagerman said on Twitter, and if you guys want to follow us on Twitter, we are at River City Rants. And I am at WILP0016. I know that's a mouthful of a handle, and I'm so sorry for that, but it was made years ago, and I don't know how to change it. So if anybody can help me, let me know. But I think that a lot of the sacks can be blamed on Henne. As Jeff Lagerman said on Twitter, only 4 of the 10 sacks were like clear shots to the quarterback, untouched. Those are going to happen. But if you've got somebody in the quarterback, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here with you because I think that you're alluding to that you don't think the rookie should start. But I'm going to say that if Blake Bortles has the ability to make it outside of the pocket and maybe make those wide receivers open, maybe we can create some plays and create some kind of movement down the field of play. Because seriously, just over 200 yards in total yards is unacceptable in a football game, and I had many feelings throughout the game that the rookie should be getting a shot. I think that He gives us the best shot to win. At the end of the day, all of these guys are competitors. They want to win. So I think that, you know, yeah, I definitely understand your frustration with the offensive line and how you want to see the rookie really bad, but you don't want to possibly throw him to the Wolves. But if he gives you the best chance to win, why not win? Like, these guys got to want to win.
I saw the Lagerman tweet, saw that, and I don't agree with it for a number of reasons.
I don't agree with the Chad Henne needs to take responsibility for a lot of those. He gets the ball out. If he's got a couple where all he has to do is just walk two steps and he's out of the box and he throws it away instead of taking a 7-yard loss. A lot of those need to go on Chad Henne as well.
I'll give him out of the 10. Out of the 10, I'm going to give him at most 3 that are his fault. And a lot of that is, 5 of it at least is going to be the offensive line. I'm sorry. It just is really, really bad. It's just not. There's no chemistry. There's no flow. The defense knows that we don't have a run. Or we don't have a run block. So like, they know when you stack 8 in the box, Toby doesn't have the speed to get the outside. There's nothing we can do. So listen, that's where I kind of come off as saying that it comes down to a combination of offensive line. I give that about 60%. 60% fault of our failures. The other 40% is divided between offensive play calling, wide receivers, and Chad Henne himself. I'm not saying Chad Henne is a good quarterback. I'm just saying I don't want Blake Bortles in there with the other 3 factors playing as bad as they are right now.
You bring up a great point with an offense that's that ineffective. It can't be hung on one guy, and it can't just be hung on the players on the field either. There is something going on in the coaching staff room that's not translating. The guys up front seem overmatched on a weekly basis. That seems more like a lack of athleticism, a lack of strength, a lack of experience. But in other areas of the game plan, we just do not have guys in the right place, and that's why I want to go ahead and segue into the defense. And I'm glad you touched on, you know, your experience as a defensive back. Please tell me what it's like to look at a Jaguar secondary that is so easily fooled, that is pulled so quickly off of the guys that they're supposed to be covering, and sometimes seem like they're just wandering out in open space.
Well, put it this way. My team sucked in high school, so I'm really not the best when it comes to showing.
No, you got burned a lot is what happened, huh?
Yeah, well, Nice in 2002, we call it the BTE, before Tebow era, when I played at Nice High School. So this is
when it was still a basketball school.
Yeah, it was a basketball school. Chet Stikitas. No, we were a golf school. All right.
A basketball school, too. 2002, yeah. Chet Stikitas took that team to a state championship. Yeah, were ballers.
Chet Stikitas. In fact, I don't know if he still has the Jacksonville area scoring record, but he did set it that year.
Yes, he did. He was a baller.
So, we weren't a good defense. So I'm not going to say I know what a good defense looks like. But at the same time, I do watch a lot of football. I actually watch a lot of film on a lot of teams, and I love the Seattle Seahawks and how they play secondary. Every single player they have back there, all 4 guys, complete each other. You have the hitters and Chancellor.
Well, we're missing one. We're missing Sip, which is a tough loss for that defense.
Sip cannot.
He's clearly the leader of that defense. I think he's taken that role for sure.
If Sip has that much impact on our defense, he needs to be the MVP of this of the whole league. Because one player goes out and you lose that much chemistry and that much talent, I'm telling you, I understand. The minute he went out, the Jaguars sucked. They have sucked ever since Cyprian went out. If he has that much impact on a team, on 21 other guys, then...
Well, we'll see when he gets healthy. We'll see what happens when he gets healthy. But, well, so we're losing the leadership with Sip. And the defense, Woody wanted to go into the defense, so I'll allow him to do that.
Sorry. Well, yeah, just back to the defensive backfield. Like you said, Gus Bradley was brought in here because he's a defensive specialist and as a former college defensive back at North Dakota State. That's his niche area. That is his explicit expertise. And in the first draft that he was with Caldwell, they went out and drafted two safeties. They drafted three cornerbacks. They were remaking that core in that first year. And yeah, we all, you know, got the idea that they were going to follow the Seattle game plan, where they draft those guys, some of them high, like we did with Cyprian, like Seattle did with Earl Thomas, and then it takes a while for them to gel and to come together. That gelling process is what we didn't see.
Absolutely.
And that's what's most concerning. Mm-hmm. You would think that in with 18 months in a system led by a guy where that is his entire career has been based on the defensive backfield play, to be the head coach and the personality on the team, to have the defensive backfield be the second worst unit, and they only get that credit because the offensive line, like Ryan said, is so poor that you can't even, they shouldn't even be rated with the 32 other NFL teams.
Oh, no.
Giving up 10 sacks, yes. You know, Henny, and I wanted to sort of sum up a point that I thought Ryan was making earlier, that Henny was responsible for a lot of those sacks. That's what's being said, but what Ryan was talking about is that the receivers weren't getting open for him, so he can really only split that responsibility there, and then the remainder going to the offensive line. But you know, Ryan, you know, I guess that's really what's most disheartening for me is Gus Bradley and his epic failure at having a cohesive defensive backfield so far. Where do we go from here?
Well, are you calling out the coaching staff right now? Is that what you're doing?
Well,
you're calling out Gus Bradley and David Caldwell. You're calling into the leadership. That's what's concerning to you right now?
I mean, can you say that it's calling out? I guess I just have a concern. I'm sure Gus Bradley has a concern. How do you, at the end of the day, look at all the blown coverages that we've had in the last 2 weeks and not sit back and think, what have I not been able to get across to these guys? How are they not picking this up? So, yeah, you know, there's Richard Sherman's and Cam Chancellor's, and, you know, those guys don't grow on trees. I accept that.
Yeah.
But the total lack of awareness on the field by that unit in particular, where it's so important. Yes, I have to question what's going on, but you know, I of course I don't have lost faith in leadership. Not yet. It's only two games in.
You got to kind of look at the DBs like this. All right, DBs is not you can have the best defensive backs in the world. With today's NFL and the new rules this year, especially, the wide receivers have such an advantage of defensive backs. It's almost ridiculous. So what you need to have is a defensive pass rush in order to help out your DBs. Because really, honestly, in today's league, a DB can only legitimately cover. The best ones probably can cover for more than four or five seconds, if that. And if you're not on the quarterback in that time, and it's over. You're going to get sliced and diced no matter who it is, unless you're Chad Henne, who seems to get a pass batted down every three attempts. But, I mean, that's just hard how it is. That's why it's a team game. Every single aspect of the defense kind of has to help the other part for it to be successful. I mean, you're never going to have a good defense that's going to be lacking, you know, severely in one area. It's because it's going to affect the other areas. You're either going to have a strong line, but you're going to have like a really strong defensive line, an average DBs. And
you'd hope to have the defensive line that we've spent the money on, well, too. You know what I mean? We obviously didn't get any pressure on Kirk Cousins because he had a field day.
If you look at the second half,
you know what I mean? So
Eagles.
if we're gonna blame, I guess you are blaming the unit. You've got to blame the whole unit because nobody was able to get to Kirk Cousins, and he literally picked us apart. He had a field day and mopped the floor with our secondary, who, honestly, without Cyprian, we saw is without their leader. It's tough. It's tough to be without Cyprian. He is the captain of that defense. Uh-huh. So it's interesting, you know what I mean, that you say that. I think that the defense it definitely has its blame, of course, but when you're not producing first downs, you literally have the defense on the field the entire game, and it gets exhausting. There's literally – we don't sustain a drive that's longer than like a minute and a half, 2 minutes. How do these guys get any kind of break? So, yeah, we're not getting to them. These guys are like 280 pounds. Bryant's huge. You know what I mean? Like, these guys have to get a break, and our offense is not doing anything to help the defense out. Sure, defense is going to win your championships, but the championship teams still have offense that's going to give them a break. You know, so it's like, offense is our number one concern right now.
Absolutely. And that's kind of where you make a good point there in saying that you need to give more time to our defense, of course. But
I think we have so many issues on offense right now that defense is good. You know what I mean? Like let's not fill our plate up with a little too much stuff. I think that our defense is going to keep us in football games, and our defense is going to give us the chance to win if our offense can at least keep it close. Like, I think that our defense is going
to
do work.
And exactly that. Just like Woody was going to, you have to start questioning some of the leadership in the front office and in the coaching staff.
And
going towards Jed Fish. I do not agree with a lot of his play calls. First of all, a minute and a half play drives, that's not the players. You can do a lot more to take a lot more time off the clock. First of all, when you have a no offensive line, you have to offset the defensive line with short passes, screen plays. That's just basic football right there. We did none of that. We were doing play action rollout passes with Chad Henne.
Yeah, there was no kind of quick slants. There was no screens.
He's not RG3.
There was nothing there for him to be able to at least make a play for him.
Well, and you bring up a great point that we're doing those rollout screens. Those are actually, in my opinion, designed for Blake Bortles. That's where he was most successful in the preseason, was rolling out, having that tight end fall back and act as another tackle, as a swing tackle, and then look downfield. That's an offense that's set up for another guy to play it. Chad Henne is a placeholder, and that's one point I want to touch on Patrick talking about focusing on the offense and not focusing on the defense, saying that, you know, we've got enough problems on one side of the ball. Let's, you know, kind of let the other one sit. And it hurts me to hear you say that, because that's the heart of a true Jaguar fan who still believes that we have a team that is going to do something and actually, you know, put on a good streak this year. I just don't see it right now. I want to believe in it, but we have had an epic failure on offense, and the defense has been a disaster, and you just can't you have one without the other. I agree with that, but you can't give the defense a pass because they're not getting pressure and they're not covering guys, and this is supposed to be a defensive-led football team, and it's not happening.
I'm not giving them a pass. I'm just saying, like they're going to keep us in the ball game. Clearly, you know, they haven't the last two games, but I think that defensive unit was strong in the first half of Philly. Clearly, the second half, Cyprian's gone. Like, I literally think the leadership is gone. I don't think there is leadership on the offense. I think we're dying for a leader on that offensive squad, and they know they've got him on the bench, but we're not giving the opportunity for him to play. Like, literally, they have a leader on the bench. The offense knows it. And now you've had recent reports about Jaguar players in the locker room going for Bortles. They've got a preference to play for Bortles, not necessarily to play for Bortles, but to play with Bortles. Because at the end of the day, these guys are professionals. They're competitors through and through, and they want to win, and they know that Bortles gives them the best chance to win. Does that give you a little boost in energy? I don't want to say yes, but maybe yes. You know what I mean? Maybe there's a little pep in step in the locker room.
But what happens when he comes in and gets his leg snapped, or he gets a torn ACL that we're always going to be thinking back in the back of our minds years from now? Is his knee going to be okay? Every time he gets hit in the knee from here on out, are we going to be scared? Like, that stuff happens. We don't want to do that. We don't want an RG3.
Clearly. I mean, we literally just saw this week that RG3 is made of glass.
Yes.
And I don't know how much longer, especially with a backup guy like Kirk Cousins, he's going to be in this league. And I understand your frustration, but Blake Bortles is not a track star like RG3 was. His game in college was able to run. That was fine. But it's a different game. It's a different world in the NFL. And Blake Bortles is built to play in the NFL. Can this kid take a hit? Absolutely. Can this kid roll out of the pocket to maybe extend the play a little bit longer and allow these receivers to get open? Absolutely. Can this guy, if he needs to, run up the middle when he finds a quick hole and pick up 7 or 8 on first down? Absolutely. This kid gives you the best chance to win. The game is tough. He knows it's tough. He's been playing it his whole life. Let him go out there. Let him learn with the best of them, and let him play.
I don't think that's the question. I think everybody in Jacksonville knows that he gives us the best chance to win. But the point is, do we want to win 3 games and maybe possibly hurt this kid for a long time? Or do we want to see him develop and let the other rookies, we have a very young team, let them develop and give him an actual team
to play
behind.
Here's one question for you, Ryan. This kid could pop his ACL in the offseason next year, waiting for his starting rookie season, and then he's done. We didn't, you know what I mean? Like, let the kid fly. The kid plays ball. Let's see him happen.
It's interesting that you can have that kind of bravado, though, after giving up 10 sacks last week and seeing an offensive line that provides no push for a running game, and then which allows the offense to devolve into being a one-dimensional passing attack where he will be chum in the water. And really what it is, it's a question of philosophies, and that's what Ryan is talking about. Do we want to be nearsighted and have something that can give us a possible spark and be a little bit more competitive this year while running a greater risk of damaging a player's confidence and his body and therefore his long-term success as a player? Or do we continue to stick with the script? The problem is that we had all of this belief in the script going into the season, but with the last 90 minutes of football that we've seen, all of that has now been sort of thrown into the wind, and now we don't know necessarily if holding him out for the year is really the wisest thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, we've known about it. We've known about it for a while. Woody started to really touch on the offensive line. We're going to move into that segment next. Guys, thanks so much for tuning in to us. My name is Patrick Woody, and of course, Kuiper. You are listening to the River City Sports Talk on RCR Radio. Follow us on Twitter at River City Rant. I am at WILP0016. I'm going to try and fix that handle as soon as possible. Thanks for tuning in, guys. We got the offensive line coming up next.
Gather around the keg, me hearties, and I'll weave you a tale of a piece of human scum. A barking mad, tat of a lad, clad in maize and blue pad, stinking a bad gonad named Chad. Chad Henne is a joke, a motherfucking joke. His Wolverines are gonna fucking croak. They call him Dr. Choke, bet on him, you'll go broke. Cause Chad Henne is a motherfucking joke. Chad Henne is a bitch, a motherfucking bitch, as welcome as a case of rectal itch. His gender he should switch, the buck defense it makes him twitch, cause Chad Henne is a motherfucking bitch. Chad Henne is a dick, a motherfucking dick, a fucked up, suck up, nasty, whiny prick. He can't get a chick, when he fucks he comes too quick, cause Chad Henne is a motherfucking dick. Clown, a motherfucking clown, the biggest clown in all Ann Arbor town, a loser all around, you son of a bitch, you're going down, cause Chad Henne is a motherfucking clown.
We are back. We're going to talk a little bit about the offensive line and I think the offensive general for the next segment. Clearly giving up 10 sacks is unacceptable on the offensive line. Beatles got burned a couple of times and he's making a lot of money. It's unacceptable for him to be able to do that. You know, he's the only one that got a good grade, a passing grade, I guess, on the offensive line's grading scale. But I don't see how any of them got a passing grade, to be quite honest. Giving up 10 sacks, they were able to stack a lot of guys in the box. They weren't able to open up any holes for the running game. Tody Gearhart, let's face it, is not a corners-type back. He's not going to hit the corners. He needs to run north and south. We knew that coming into this season, and the offensive line isn't able to do anything and when it comes to producing holes for him to run. If you're not going to be able to really establish the running game, they're going to be able to throw eight in the box all day. They're going to pin their ears back and come at us, which is what they did. The offensive line was pitiful and is definitely a hot topic of discussion right now. I'm interested to see these guys' opinions. Ryan, what are you thinking about the offensive line? I mean, you were there. You saw it.
Yeah, I definitely saw the offensive line or lack thereof. Like I said, we went over that earlier. There's no chemistry up there. They don't know what they're young. There's no like they're not gelling. They're not coming together. It's just bad. It's really bad. All across the board. And just now we lost one of our best blockers and wide receivers in Mercedes Lewis, and it's just going to get even worse now. And there's no light at the end of the tunnel for Jaguar fans as far as hope out there. I mean, we're going to go into a little bit later in the show. Maybe there's some hope out there that we can find on the free agent.
As a fan, you never lose hope. I
never lose hope. I'm one of those dumb idiot fans that every single Sunday home game, I'm going to be out there sunburnt and cheering my Jaguars on. And despite the record we've had over the course of the last few years, I'm still going to be out there. I'm just, you know, I'm blindly in love with the team. So
sure, and those are the kind of fans that keep a franchise in a city, that keep the stadium packed year in and year out, no matter what the ebb and flow is with the team as they're playing. And we're all here because we love this team, and that's why we do this podcast. And those out there listening are listening because they love this team. And so that's why it's so disheartening to come on here and talk about such an epic failure that we saw on Sunday. And when we talk about the offensive line, there is just a lack of leadership. Zane Beatles, as Patrick alluded to earlier, signed a free agent deal, 5 years, $27 million to come in here and be a linchpin in the offensive line at that left guard position, get out on the run and get out in front and get this running game going, and to be a stalwart in the passing attack. He may have gotten a passing grade, from the serious film watchers, but I've seen several plays that we've had queued up here in the studio of him just absolutely getting manhandled out there. It was Brewster-esque, if you will. But I don't want to, I look at him as somebody who's lacking leadership, but I have to go one spot over and say, Luke Jokel, yes, last season it was cut short. You are our number two pick, and it didn't go well for you, but now you've gone through a full season of conditioning, a full season of training camp. You're healthy, but I don't see you out there rallying the troops. I don't see you out there being a leader on that O-line and getting in people's faces, smacking helmets, a la Tony Boselli. Tony Boselli was a great left tackle because he played with a fire, and we don't have that fire on this offensive line. And a guy who is that highly touted, that highly rated out of Texas A&M, somebody that we take with the number two overall pick, he can't just be adequate, which I would say that is exactly what he has been, is just adequate. He's got to have more than that, don't you think, Ryan?
It's great that you bring that up. All right. Babyface Jokel is exactly what you kind of alluded to right there. The toughness on the front line. It's kind of like the running, like inside my head, like when I'm a Jaguars fan, every single year I feel like these past few years, I'm like, man, we're going to have the number one pick overall. The Jaguars, for anybody who doesn't follow the team as closely as maybe us three, the Jaguars have never, except aside from the expansion draft, have never had the top overall pick. We always get, one or two teams come in.
We didn't even have the first pick in the expansion draft, Carolina.
I know, Carolina did. We've never had the first overall draft pick. That's something that's been huge for us, because look what's happened. For some reason, when we have a chance to have the number one draft pick, someone from our own division comes in and gets it. It happened with the Colts in the year that we all know they mailed that in right away so they can get Andrew Luck. And then it happened with Clowney this past year. And now the Jaguars, the year before that, in Jokel draft, if you remember, Eric Fisher, he was the number one tackle taken overall. And if you look at the two players, the difference between the two players, Eric Fisher looks like just a big ugly, just a gnarly dude, nasty, really raw, but has the strength and the ability to learn and adapt. Jokel comes in, and I swear to God, I thought he looked like a 17-year-old Boy Scout. And, like, I don't understand. It kind of goes towards, like, what the Jaguar team is. All three of us, we're in different parts of the country, actually. We're all listening to 1010 XL this morning when a caller called in and actually alluded to the toughness factor of our team. And it just kind of struck me. It's something I've always thought. We don't have any, like, tough, dirty, gritty guys that really that we can say hang our hats on. Like we did with, you know, back when Big John and Marcus Stroud, they gave us that toughness in the middle. They were this, those two huge bulks of mass in the middle, and they were nasty. But I'm talking now, we don't have.
Respected in the league. He definitely had his backers through the whole situation, of course, even within that Miami Dolphins locker room. Why can't we bring in somebody like that? I mean, obviously, GMs and owners are pretty aware of the PR risks by taking a player, especially with everything that's going on in the NFL right now. But, I mean, what else do we have to hang our hat on? You know what I mean? Like, what? Why not give it a shot? It's something.
Exactly.
It's something. Clearly what we have isn't working, and there's a viable option out there. They can play the right or left side of the ball. Let them go out there and play. Let them whack them around a little bit. I don't know.
That kind of comes full circle on my point of he is a tough, hard-nosed player. Even in Miami, I don't even watch that many Miami games, but he always seemed to draw my attention to him. And when a right guard or a guard on the offensive line is getting my attention, like, you know, getting a spark fired up in the offense and creating all types of mishaps on the offense, on the defensive line with his, you know, whatever type of play, he might be a dirty player. But at the same time, we need that on our team right now. We just need like one guy to kind of change the personality in the face.
Here's a question for us: why don't we bring in Brad Meester as our offensive lines coach?
How about we just bring him in to play center?
I think he could probably still play. Like, sign him to something.
I mean, he's 80 pounds lighter, but he's definitely better than any option we have right now at 80 pounds lighter.
Well, I think Incognito and Meester, unfortunately, that they would give you about the same amount of success on the field. I don't see Incognito being able to come into a locker room with the cloud that's over his head and guys are going to fall in behind him. I think he is able to bring that out of players because he's in the trenches with them and he's established a certain amount of rapport with at least some of the players so that it all goes together. He wasn't alone in that bullying scandal down there. He had a couple of helpers, not the least of which was Mike Pouncey. It's not just one guy that can have that effect, and it's especially not him, at least in my opinion, because he has been defamed for that specifically. I think what we need is to have some homegrown guys who come in and have that kind of a spark. We thought Jonathan Cyprian would be that guy. He certainly plays like it on the field, but he's not a fiery, real vocal leader. I didn't hear him or really anyone in that practice that we went to. None of the players were really giving it to any of the other players or trying to get them fired up. And Ryan, I want you to talk about going into halftime and then the reaction that you saw from the players coming out of the locker room to sort of accentuate that point that we've been talking about, this lack of a firebrand on the team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think all this whole show we've been kind of alluding to three main factors. At least I have been. My whole point, the three main factors in that loss, or the four main factors, was the line, Chad Henne, our wide receivers, and fourth was our offensive coaching. Now, halftime came around. I was up in the 200 sections, pretty far away. And if you've never been to FedEx Field, the 200 sections actually underneath an overhang where, you know, if a punter punts the ball, you lose the ball for a little bit until it comes down. I couldn't see the scoreboard. They had TVs in the corners up above so you could actually see the score going on and anything you might be missing, say, like in a punt situation. There's also seats behind poles out there. It was crazy. But halftime came down, said, screw this. We're getting our ass beat. I'm at least going to get better seats. So got down.
Let me watch the beating a little bit closer.
Yeah, let me get better. Well, actually, it went down because the cheerleaders, I don't know, Redskins cheerleaders are pretty hot, and their dances are pretty risque compared to the Jaguars. But I went down there mainly for that, to tell you the truth. But
is that what sent you to the strip club? Because you did mention you went to the strip
club. That was the previous one. Maybe that's what got me down. I was like, oh, man, I'm getting down there close.
Still had strip club fever. Yeah. I get it. All right, cool.
Still had some ones left. And then so what happened was we got down to about eight rows from the field. And they come in a diagonal. Jaguars, if you know Everbank Field, they kind of come in right behind their bench area. That's where their tunnel is. Well, in the FedEx Field, they come in at the corners of the end zone. So I was able to like finagle my way over by the tunnel where the Jaguars were coming out from halftime. Obviously, if you guys remember, going into halftime, Mercedes Lewis had that great, awesome play, catch, touchdown. And we stopped them to hold them at the end.
We make a defensive stand with a minute 40 left after scoring a touchdown.
Exactly.
21-7 going into half. You think you get a little bit of excitement, building it up a little bit.
And with the coach, I'd be like, hey, listen, if it wasn't for that drop pass by Hearns, this is a way different ball game. This might be a 14-14 game if you're going to go ahead and factor in the field position change and all that good stuff when you score a touchdown. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to go root on my Jags. Before they come out of the tunnel, I'm going to go ahead. I pretty much know, I'd say, about 75% of Jaguars' names by their numbers. So I'm there. I finagled my way around to the rail and was able, like, literally 3 feet away from the players coming out on the field. And I'm going to say the first thing that struck me was the lack of enthusiasm coming out of that tunnel. I don't know what was said in the locker room. Obviously, I wish I did. But I guarantee you it wasn't very positive and it wasn't very motivating based on the players coming out in their body language. To me, I was calling them out by their first names. I mean, I was calling out Roy Miller, Andre Branch. Any of them listening to the show, if they ever get to listen to this show, they'll remember me because I was calling them by their first name. I got one player to really acknowledge and give any type of enthusiasm, like positive, all right, let's do this type of response. And that was from Telvin Smith. And obviously, he's a rookie. And right now, he didn't get too much playing time on Sunday. So he probably was ready to take the field. But it just wasn't there. They were walking out slowly. They were about three or four feet apart from each other. There was no hype. The coaches had their heads down. It just seemed like they gave up.
And is there any sport that's run more on raw emotion?
Absolutely not.
Than football?
That's what I'm saying right here. I said this on Facebook and I tweeted it out. The turning point in that game happened about 3.5 minutes into the game. And it was
the Allen Hurns drop.
Allen Hurns drop.
Absolutely. It set the tone for the entire game for the Jaguars.
Absolutely. And it just fed into the stereotype of a Jacksonville Jaguar, and
you got to make that catch.
You have to
hit you in the hands.
Make that
you have
catch.
To make that catch, and that's a frustrating.
And it was hard to recover
part.
From.
And
that.
You know what? We talk about a spark, like a spark. Whether I don't know if it has to be on the defensive side of the ball or the offensive side of the ball, but I think that that spark could quite possibly be sitting on our bench, which just adds to the frustration. You know what I mean? Because we're bringing up all the ideas of things that we might need, and it could quite possibly be sitting on our bench.
You might be right about that.
With the way that we've seen Bortles play in this preseason, we've made it extremely difficult. He's now put his name in the running for that quarterback job because of his play.
Let me ask
Not just because he was the third overall draft pick. They could have sat him all year long, no problem. But because of his play in the preseason, he's earned the right to be in this discussion.
Yeah.
And honestly, he's earned a very big part about it.
And now let me ask you something about this. Now, for the insider Jaguar fans, this hasn't been widely reported, especially by 1010XL. Them being, I want to say they're toting the company line at times now, since they're definitely the official radio station of the Jacksonville Jaguars. No one's reporting on the division in the locker room, except for a couple guys. Like, who was the guy today? Was it Jason Cole today that broke the story of the I'm sorry, what's his name? The reporter broke the story about the division in the locker room. The players won
Bortles. Yeah, from Big Cat Country, they were the ones who put the story out first, or at least that's where I saw it first. We're getting the name of the reporter now. You know, you have to expect that kind of reaction in a locker room with a bunch of guys who, you know, are really frustrated. And you're right, Patrick. They saw a kid who has that it factor during the preseason. And, you know, Chad Henne, like we said, he does things well, but he doesn't have that it factor. He doesn't climb the pocket well. He doesn't look off receivers the way you need to do it. And he can't extend, he can't extend plays with his legs like we saw Blake Bortles do in the preseason. We've touched on this. Ryan thinks that, you know, the more conservative approach and waiting until the offensive line gels a little more would be the right way to go for a long term successful project with the team. And Patrick raises a point where, you know, let's put him out there, let him take his licks now. He's just like everybody else. He's a big guy. He knows how to play the game. Let him learn on the fly, just like every other great quarterback has had to do. And both of these schools of thought have merit. Right now, I think it's too early to hit the panic button on David Caldwell and Gus Bradley. Certainly, my faith has been shaken. I think that we still have a long season to go. I think a lot of expectations were put on this Washington game to spark our home opener with Indianapolis. And when that fell through on Sunday and with such a colossal defeat, we're starting to spiral. And I think it's too early to do that.
Let me ask you one thing. What week is Blake Bortles taking the field?
If it's not because of a Henny injury, I think that it's got to be with a full, you know, extra week of preparation during the bye. So I think that they would want to schedule it that way. But again, Henny took 10 sacks on Sunday. If that pace continues, we're going to be seeing Blake Bortles by, you know, halfway through the first quarter in Indianapolis, potentially.
Any chance of him starting this Sunday?
No, but can we take out a collection fund for, like, Bounty Gate, every defense that plays Chad Henne? Can we do that?
And Kickstarter campaign?
Kickstarter campaign to pay for Bounty number two, but it's Jacksonville fans paying the defenses that play Chad Henne. I think that's a great idea for all Blake Bortles supporters.
And Roger Goodell can't do anything.
Roger Goodell's hands are tied right now. He's in enough trouble himself.
He takes my season tickets away. You're taking your season tickets away.
But honestly, how much worse could it get if you were to do a bounty on him? They're going to get more than 10 sacks. I mean, really, it doesn't get any worse than what we've seen. And that's just what's so disheartening about this whole thing. Maybe they will rally, but to hear Ryan talk about how deflated they came out at halftime, and then just to look back a week earlier with how flat they came out in the Philadelphia game, it just doesn't gel with what we think we know about Gus Bradley and the way that he brings the intensity when he's with his guys.
Yeah, they seem like they're out there. They're one of those teams out there that...
How was dinner last night? Was it good?
They're out there collecting a paycheck, man, I hate that.
We're going to run some sprints in a little bit.
Exactly. Why can't we just... it seems like they're collecting a paycheck. There's no, like, pride. I know we don't have a franchise that's built like that. It's like a huge, long, majestic history, like the Cowboys or even the Redskins with their, like, what, one Super Bowl in the past.
It's tough.
Five years.
It's tough to. Here's another thing. It's also tough to start the season 0-2 at you know, Philly week one in Washington week two.
But that's what happens when you're a bad football team.
I know, but we've had such a big offseason with the expansion of the stadium and the idea and the vibe in the city. So if we get a home game week one or week two, you know what I mean? We're not so discouraged because there is a lot of hype.
Absolutely.
We've got such, you know, all the expansions to the stadium. Like, if we get a home game week one, week two, we're showing the team that there's something behind them. So it's kind of – it's difficult for – to hang it on the players like that, but it'd be really nice to be able just to come home. We're obviously coming home against a very good Colts team who's putting on a display right now, tearing up the team that just beat us in Philly. But if we were able to have a presence within the first two games with everything that's gone on down at Everbank Field, I think it would have changed a lot for this team.
Absolutely.
Well, I think you bring up a great point, and I think we'll start the next segment by talking about what we think the atmosphere is going to be like. First off, what we think the team is going to hopefully play like and play well this Sunday. And so stay right with us. We'll be right back. This is RCRradio.com, and this is Sports Talk. We are excited to be here, and we will be right back with you.
All right, guys, we are back. Thank y'all so much for tuning in. We got a quick little end of program session that we're going to do real quick. We really appreciate y'all tuning in. We are Patrick, Woody, and Ryan from River City Sports Talk on rcrradio.com. Follow us on Twitter at River City Rant and at WILP0016. Again, thanks so much for tuning in. We love talking to you guys. We love talking about the Jaguars, which is why we're doing this. To finish it up, obviously, we've touched on a lot of points this evening. We've touched on frustrations, on different positions that quite possibly be to blame. Maybe the coaching's to blame. We've touched on quite a bit of it. But now we're going to look forward, because at the end of the day, you still have to look forward. You still have another game next week. And we do finally get to come home. Hopefully it's going to be a rowdy crowd, as we've expected and actually experienced since the stadium's had the renovations that they have. So hopefully we can get a place that's rocking and packed. Unfortunately, we play the Colts, who right now are lighting up the Philadelphia Eagles. Obviously, the Eagles are sticking around, but that offense looks extremely explosive. Andrew Luck threw his 50th touchdown pass, and he's only in his third year, which is absolutely amazing. So we're going to look ahead to it, what we've got to look forward to, which I don't think is a whole lot. I think we're going to get we're going to stick around for a first half, and then I think the Colts are going to knock our clocks out, honestly. The defense, maybe if Cyprian can get back, if he can clear concussion testing, that'd be great for the defense. Subdue Andrew Luck a little bit, and that deep ball that he could throw oh so well. I think we're quite familiar with it too as Jags fans. But I think I'll go ahead and call, I don't want to call it too bad because I want to think that we're going to play close, but I'm going to say 28-17. Maybe the offense gels a little bit. We are watching a little bit of the game that's going on right now, and they don't have very much presence on that defensive line, as John Gruden was just explaining. So I think we'll be able to be successful, maybe not successful on the offensive side of the ball, but I think we'll be able to be competitive and to keep up for a little bit. But I think that offense is going to take over and just completely score too many points. So I think 28-17, the Colts, and then we go to San Diego 0-3, which is just a scary, scary thought. Right,
not going to win out there. Never have. Never will. Well, not going to say never will, but we don't go. We don't travel to the West Coast and do very well, do we?
Yeah, we've never won over on the West Coast, so it's kind of a scary thing if we lose next week. So I've got to start gaining some faith in myself for the Jags. But if we lose, we go to San Francisco 0-3, so 0-4 maybe, with Pittsburgh coming home week 5. That could be dangerous.
Just like every Jaguars fan, we've kind of gotten used to it. Over the past few years, we know how it goes. Mondays are always the worst day of the week after a loss, and then Tuesday, we're kind of like, all right, trying to pick ourselves up a little bit. Wednesday, Thursday comes along, start talking about the next week, and then Friday, Saturday, with college football, we're ready for some Jaguar football. And Sunday, this upcoming Sunday with opening day, we might come out with a little bit extra pep in our step, and that's what I'm hoping for. You kind of alluded to it, the D-line of the Indianapolis Colts is not very good, and neither is our offensive line. So maybe it'll be a more even of a matchup, and Chad can actually get the ball out of his hand a little bit quicker this time around, and a little bit more gel. What I'm looking for mostly, better play calls on the offensive coordinator's behalf, and better wide receiver play. I think if those two things come together, you'll see a better Chad Haney out there.
Yeah, I think the Jaguars are going to want to come out and establish the running game. That's what they've tried to do in the last two games, but to no avail. And without it, we really become a mediocre offense, because the passing game is not a strength. So we have to try and establish the running game. We believe Toby Gerhardt was going to be a weapon by signing him to a big free agent deal this year. And he's played tough. He's run hard. I don't think that he's used to the best that we could use him. I think Ryan touched on that, and I know Patrick mentioned it earlier. He's a north and south runner between the tackles, and they keep running them to the outside. Some of us believe that it's the play calling that's making that the way to go, but I think it's out of necessity. I think Jed Fish sees that we have no push up front with our guard play and with our center, that maybe the only success he has is to maybe bounce one out. So I think they're going to really try and establish the running game. I think they're going to count on the fan base to keep the team in the game. If we start to fall down on hard times, I hope that the crowd doesn't turn on them and boo them. I hope that we can stay positive. I hope we can be really loud on third down. And if we do start to get behind, I'd love to see some resilient Jaguar fans just appreciate the ambiance of where they are, are enjoy the great stadium upgrades that we've made and look at a Generation Jaguar around them and feed off of that energy and then help give a boost to the Jags. And with that being said, it's going to be a close game. I don't think the Jaguars are going to be able to pull out the win. They could surprise us, but really I would just be thrilled with a competitive matchup, maybe some bright spots to reemerge, see something, some leadership in that defensive backfield, see that offensive line play a little better, and you know, let's have these wide receivers, give them another chance. They're all, you know, incredibly young. So that's really what I want to see. I want to see player development. I think wise Jaguar fans should still go ahead and start to make that shift now. And and I think it's going to be a close one. Colts, 28, and the Jaguars 10. So it'll be close in the first half, but I think they'll pull away in the second half.
Yeah, I'll go back to my prediction for the score. I'm going to be right around what you guys are saying. 27. They're going to go ahead and, 2 field goals and 3 touchdowns on us, and we might get by with scoring 14 points. So 27-14.
Yeah, Patrick, what do you think, what do you think that if they come out, the Colts, and put 45 on us, are you going to be surprised by that?
No, I mean, we just saw them give up 41 to a Redskins offense that I didn't think an RG3 and DeSean Jackson-less Washington Redskins team put up 41. So if Andrew Luck and Trent Richardson and Ahmad Bradshaw want to put 45 on us, I could totally see it happening. Absolutely. Do I want to see us be competitive every single week? I think the offense might be able to produce a little bit more points. I think that hopefully we'll be able to bounce back. Again, I'm being a total optimist, but we'll just have to wait and see. I think that, We'll have to wait to see. That's going to be it for us, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in. We really appreciate it. I am joined by Ryan Kuiper, Woody Powell, and, of course, I am your host, Patrick Wilkins. Thanks so much for tuning in. Follow us on Twitter, at River City Rant, and at WILP0016. You're listening to the River City Sports Talk on RCR Radio. Thanks so much, guys.